On today's edition of the Locked On Nets podcast, Josh and I continue discussing the 2013-2014 Brooklyn Nets season. We get into round one of the playoffs, the Nets going up against the Toronto Raptors. All that and more coming up on Locked On Nets.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Yeah, and yet somehow, despite that, they swept the Heat in the regular season. Part of that January stretch where they won 10 of 11, there were multiple five-game win streaks, one of which was capped with a double overtime win over the Heat, 104-95. Darren Williams didn't play in this game, but Sean Livingston, like you mentioned, he was so good. 19 points, 11 rebounds, 5 assists in that game. LeBron fouled out in overtime. Joe Johnson, 32 points. And but the thing that jumped out to me the most, Josh, the nickname jerseys. Do you remember these?
Oh, my God. These were something else.
Yeah, they've started doing it in Major League Baseball, too. But this was one of a kind.
Oh, my God. I remember. That Teletovic and LeBron were just, like, trash talking back and forth.
Yeah. They were, like, a lot of talking.
Josh Bell.
For no real reason. In these series. Yeah, LeBron fouled out at the end of overtime, if I remember correctly, the first overtime.
Gotcha. Yeah, I mean, the nickname jerseys, I think, like, everyone thought they would be good, but then, like, no one had a jersey. Like, no, like, the nicknames that people actually, like, everyone calls Teletovic, like, Teletubby, and he probably had MT3 on the jersey, or MT33.
Yeah, there's just not enough, like, good nicknames. Like, Chris Bosh's was CD, Udonis Haslam's was UD. Like you said, it's just a lot of, like, initials.
Yeah, like, Marcus Thornton, every Nets fan knows his nickname is Lobster Mac, because when they traded for him, he immediately got food poisoning. San Fran playing the Warriors, and he got food poisoning from lobster mac and cheese, so he had to sit out that game. Everyone calls
him. But he would never get that on his jersey.
I know, but he should have.
It's the inherent problem. They should really let fans vote on the nickname to go on the back. At least it's like what they do with the All-Star game, where it's like partial representation that way. Like, I think some of them worked. I like Paul Pierce's just Truth on the back. There's definitely some good ones, but not enough to justify, like, everyone on the team having them.
Exactly. Like, if Darren Williams has it, it's a fan vote. It's like Huge Prick or something like that. or whatever. What was, like, trying to think who was like on that Nets team that was pretty obscure that year. Like, is Marquise Teague having one? Jorge Gutierrez, Reggie Evans.
Karolinko's was apparently just Cyrillic lettering. I'm assuming it's his name.
Toko Shingelia, Toko Loko.
Yeah. There was even more to talk about than just the nickname jerseys. The Nets did win that game. They beat the Heat two more times. They were 4-0 against the Heat during the regular season. The third game, they won 96-95 and improved to 33-30, which gave them, at that point since January 1st, a 23-9 record, which was the best in the Eastern Conference. And the Nets were 31-1 when leading after three quarters at that point, which just goes to show, again, how important those third quarters were to this team over the course of the season, where early on, they were blowing leads in that quarter, and then once the calendar flipped, they were able to hold on to them, enter the fourth with a lead, and kind of from there, their experience and, like, mental toughness was enough to grind out a lot of wins. And against the Heat specifically, it was three wins by 1 point, plus that double overtime game. So all four games extremely close, but the Nets did pull out all four of them. And Josh, did you feel going into the playoffs like you had some sort of edge over the Heat, or did you think that this was kind of just a fluke?
I mean, I thought it was kind of a fluke, and who knows? I mean, maybe, like, 18-year-old me was talking myself into something, but I think I was pretty realistic about this Nets team, and I was done with D-Will at that point. And I think from a talent perspective, it's clear that they were overmatched. And I think experience is one thing, and I think that's really what the Nets had to hang their hat on, because they were 14th in offensive rating throughout the season, 20th in defensive rating. Expected win-loss was 38 wins. Like, to even get to 44, it was really a lot of relying on kind of the guile of the veterans. But when you go up against a team that has LeBron, Wade, Bosh, they have experience, but they also have hell of a lot more talent than the Nets.
Yeah. Experience is great if it's the only thing that either team has. Like you kind of see in the first round. But
yeah. January experience is great, but it's not playing the Heat in May.
Yeah. So yeah, that was the regular season, 44-38. One thing that surprised me, because like I knew that the Nets had a ton of injury issues this year, but it was just stunning to see that Joe Johnson, the only guy
to start even
70 games over the course of the season, he played 79. That hypothetical starting lineup of D. Will, Joe Johnson, Pierce, KG, and Brooke combined to miss 134 games, most of that from Brooke, but still the other guys, aside from Joe Johnson, all missed like 14 games, 20 games, like in that range. So a ton of injuries throughout the year, which I don't know. I feel like 44-38 is probably about right for this team, where they could have been higher maybe if they were healthier, but also they won a lot of 1-point games and like maybe should have been lower than this. In the end, I think this is probably the right record for this team. Also, a thing that I noticed, which we talked about the 0-1-0-2 Nets, where no one averaged 15 points a game. Joe Johnson, the only guy to do that for this Nets team. Brooke would have done it, but only played in 17 games. And then, like you mentioned, 20th in defense, 14th in offense, just a pretty average team, 25th in pace, which is obviously explained by their age, and 17th in attendance, which was kind of better than I thought. I don't know.
Really, really good for the Nets.
Yeah.
You think about even the last couple of years, they're like 28th, 29th. And I think, we need to talk about like just the importance that they kind of got bailed out by a guy in Sean Livingston, who was like, they signed the offseason prior, was not like a highly thought of guy at that point in terms of being a role player. Like, obviously, very cerebral player, someone who it's his career, the way it turned out, was devastating after that really gruesome injury when he was starting to take off with the Clippers. But he had bounced around for a bunch of teams prior to the Nets picking him up the season before. He spent a lot of time with the Cavs. But he was just kind of a guy there. And the Nets pick him up, and he ends up playing 76 games, 26 minutes a game, really one of their most integral players on defense, and also being able to hit a bunch of clutch shots and just nail a 14-footer on a consistent basis.
Yeah, he was awesome. And this was like right before he joined the Warriors the following season. And it seemed like, I don't know, when he joined the Warriors team, I felt like, oh, yeah, of course. Like Sean Livingston is doing all this with the Warriors. Like that makes so much sense, blah, blah, blah. But like you said, it was really not a guarantee when he joined the Nets that he was going to be really any kind of contributor. So the fact that he came as far as he did from the injury he had, is it really speaks volumes.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, he was able he got the minimum basically with the Nets and was able to parlay that prior off or that offseason following to a really nice contract with the Warriors, who hadn't taken off the way that they ended up with winning a bunch of championships at that time. So he was able to make that a real win. I was pretty surprised when the Nets didn't re-sign him, actually, considering how integral he was to their success.
But regardless, Josh, should we talk about the playoffs here, that first-round series against Toronto?
Do it.
All right, so the Nets were the 6th seed, 44-38, like we said, taking on the 3 seed Raptors, who went 48-34. They had split the season series 2-2. So even though this was like a 3-6, it was pretty evenly matched, especially when you consider that the Nets had the experience edge for sure. They entered the series. Their rotation had about 17,000 minutes of playoff experience compared to just 1,600 for Toronto. And this was an interesting thing I saw in a Reddit AMA that March. Terrence Ross said that he wanted to play the Nets, Josh. He got what he wanted, and not in the good way. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think going into this series, like, I was pretty confident because I think the experience factor really showed. You had a Toronto team where basically it was a lot of these first guys time in the playoffs. I mean, Toronto was one of the biggest surprise teams of that season. They had been terrible for the years before, were not really expected to be good. Win-loss was over-under was 35.5, and they ended up having a really good year based on kind of DeRozan's emergence as a scorer and Lowry's emergence as an all-around player. And you had guys like Amir Johnson, who was a really solid kind of defensive player and energy guy. Ross was kind of an instant offense guy that they had. Valanciunas was someone that was in his second or third season in the league and was kind of coming to his own a bit as a solid big. But from like when, especially as the game slows down in the playoffs, like the Nets had a pretty clear advantage. Especially in the playoffs, your lack of athleticism isn't really going to hurt you as much as it will over the course of an 82-game regular season. You're going to get a lot of rest. So this went seven games, but I was kind of surprised it did. I thought the Nets would be able to handle them in quicker fashion, but again, they disappointed me a bunch of times that season.
Yeah, and this was also the series that started the mini Nets-Raptors rivalry with Masai Ujiri's comment, the fuck Brooklyn.
Exactly. Exactly.
I know a former guest on this podcast, Matthew Drexler, was infuriated by that. He would not stop talking to me about it for various points when we worked together at the NBA. Definitely left a mark on him. But regardless, the Nets managed to win the series. Let's break it down a little bit, though. In game one, the Nets win in Toronto, and they have an 18-2 run early on. There's KG and Kyle Lowry getting tangled up after a play. One thing that I did not remember, but was like stunned that this happened so recently, was that the shot clock went out and the backup didn't work either, and the PA announcer had to verbally call out the shot clock like over the stadium's loudspeaker. So there was like no visual of it, and it would just be like at a certain point the PA guy would just go like 10, 9, which is really wild. And pretty much every analyst that I saw said that that probably benefited the Nets and their experience and just kind of like rolling with it, as opposed to, like you said, that young Raptors team, which was like really getting like their first taste of playoff basketball for a lot of them. And to have in game one that happen is like, oh boy, like what do you do from there?
Yeah, no, that's like, it goes to show how far we've come in a few years. Also, like another thing that I think just in general about basketball, like, as I mentioned before, that the Nets were 7th in three-point rate. The team that was first that year was the Rockets. And if you took their three-point rate into the 1920 season, they would be actually they would be behind every single team.
Jeez.
But that game one, that's kind of the origin of the Pierce. You know, he's hitting all the big shots in the fourth quarter. He had a nice kind of fadeaway jumper from the top of the key. Had that drive and kick play where he went around Valanciunas, faked the shot, and was able to get an easy layup out of that. He had his iconic "That's why they brought me here" moment. really, it still holds up looking back on it.
It really does, yeah. And I mean, yeah, Pierce and like even KG hit a shot or two towards the end. Like the Raptors led 76-75 with about 5 minutes left, and then the Nets went on that 9-0 run to pull away and eventually close it out. And yeah, it was just kind of Pierce saying like, I've been here, I've done this, and like looking at the Raptors, like, are any of you going to step up? And no one did in game one. DeRozan was really bad, but he did play a lot better going forward in the series.
Yeah, no, DeRozan, like, he was an up-and-down player in that series, but he did have some really good games. Him and Lowry, I mean, Lowry shot the three ball really well. He was shooting at 40% for the series. He was able to do a lot of damage. You had a guy like even Grievous Vasquez who
– yes.
Big guard who's super crafty, and that's going to give the Nets a lot of trouble. I always have a soft spot in my heart for him because he's a Maryland guy. Played briefly for the Nets actually for a couple games. Not a lot of people know that, but you know, he was someone back at that time who could get buckets and was a really, really good backup guard. He was able to give the Nets some trouble, especially when you're throwing guys out there like a Marcus Thornton, who are defensive weak spots and really don't have the size to match up.
Yeah, and, like, I completely forgot about Grievous Vasquez, but like you, I really liked watching him play, and, like, I didn't realize how big of an impact he had on the series. Like, every recap I was reading of, like, Raptor wins were, like, at some point it would say, like, and then Grievous Vasquez hit a three to, like, ice the game or whatever, and it's like, oh my god, again? Like,
he was the game for them.
Yeah, he was, like, a real contributor for them, and there were moments when I was, like, first watching it where I thought he was Landry Fields, and then, no, he's much better.
He definitely was much better.
Landry Fields also on that team, though. Shout out to him. But yeah, the Raptors bounce back in game two. They win 105-100. DeRozan bounces back, especially with 30 points. Valanciunas, a big double-double. And Pierce struggled and kind of regretted that the Nets didn't close the door and take both of those games, which would have put them really in the driver's seat heading home up 2-0. And he expressed remorse, like feeling that he kind of let the team down and that they had an opportunity to end this series quickly, which I don't know, maybe that makes a difference in round two if they're able to close it out in like 4 or 5 games and not have to go through this grueling series. You know, the Heat get by Charlotte really quickly, and so they're extremely well rested. I think they have 8 days off before that round two series, which we'll get to in a bit. But yeah, maybe like with an older team like this, maybe they could have really used that rest. So this game two actually maybe was really big for Brooklyn.
Yeah, I mean, the Nets, like, the Raptors turned the ball over 20 times, and the Nets only turned it over 10. And the Raptors shot 2 of 16 from 3, and the Nets still lost this game.
Yeah, that's pretty bad.
It's not great. I mean, I don't know. I think it's always tough to win both games on the road to start the series. So mm-hmm. I think getting the split, especially if you win the first game, I'm sure, I don't know if you're ever going to be taking your foot off the gas, but I don't know. The desperation just isn't there, probably.
Yeah. So it goes back to Brooklyn tied at 1 apiece. Game 3, the Nets win 102-98. Joe Johnson with 29 points. The Nets nearly blow a 15-point lead in the fourth quarter before they eventually pull out ahead. There was a great moment in the second quarter. Josh, KG dives for a loose ball, rips it away, holds it above his head. And then the clip that I watched, they showed a close-up shot of him, and it was like kind of slow-mo as he was talking to the crowd, and it was literally a blur over his mouth for like 10 straight seconds, just all expletives. It was incredible.
Classic KG.
He's like pulling up the Brooklyn on his jersey, like showing that off to the crowd. It's remarkable like how intense he is, especially considering like he had just come to this team and they like hadn't done very much at all at that point, like, but he's still like so passionate about it and about winning. It's really wild.
Yeah, no, I mean, his passion is has no rival.
Really. Yeah. Yeah. So the Nets win game 3, and then game 4, the Raptors managed to win it 87-79. They blew a big lead. They were up by as many as 17, but then they managed to hold on and win in the fourth quarter. And in that fourth quarter, the Nets scored just 12 points. Another missed opportunity to kind of end this series quicker. And the Raptors did a great job of just kind of hanging around in this game and in the series.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think from like the Nets had all the big names, but the Raptors, like, they might have had the best player in the series in Lowry, because he was just like an absolute bulldog, and he was really, really difficult to stop then, both as a defensive force with his strength, his really excellent hands, getting into guys, and then offensively, could shoot the ball, could drive. He really kind of was their entire engine and made things happen for them.
Yeah, DeRozan did a lot of the scoring, but efficiency-wise, it was definitely Lowry. And like as we saw in the most recent playoffs, his like intangibles are off the chart, and like all the stuff he brings defensively, you can't really put a value on it. So then the series goes back to Toronto for Game 5. The Raptors, a narrow 115-113 win. They nearly blew a 26-point lead, and in the fourth quarter, despite the loss, the Nets outscored Toronto 44-24, which was not quite enough. But I think you kind of see this where, like, I think it happens a lot in the NFL where, like, a team wants to have, like, a good fourth quarter to kind of get that momentum going into the next game. And even though they wound up losing this game, I think that the Nets were very confident after this fourth quarter just because of how dominant they were in it. And Paul Pierce said, I think we'll play better on Friday at home, and we'll see them back here Sunday. No real doubt in his mind. Do you remember anything about this game, Josh? The Nets nearly come back from that huge deficit, but fall just short.
Yeah, I don't think I was as optimistic as Paul Pierce.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I've just seen so much disappointment. Like, especially, like, if it was a game one or two, then it's fine. Yeah, hey, right. You have a great comeback. You lose, you have momentum for the future games. When you're losing a game 5 and now you're in a 3-2 position where you know game 7 is going to be on the road, I'm not feeling like super pumped, no matter what Paul Pierce says.
He's the truth, though.
Yeah.
It has to be true.
Had 36 in this game.
Yes.
And this is really his, like, I'd say, like, national coming out party.
So that's going to do it for this edition of the Locked On Nets podcast. The Brooklyn Nets down 3-2 to the Toronto Raptors. Will they come back and advance to face the Miami Heat in round two? You can Google it if you want, but Josh and I'll be back to talk about it tomorrow. Until then, if you want even more Locked On NBA content, just tell your smart device to play the latest episode of Rejecting the Screen, and Josh and I'll be back in your ears tomorrow with part 3 of this series. Until then, be well. Bye.